Hi, everyone, and welcome.
Welcome to my talk. My name is Raquel Gomez, and I am working at Washington State University at the Tree Fruit Research Center under Dr. Lee Kalkfitz. So I'm here to tell you guys about some of the work that I'm doing regarding how above-ground conditions are affecting strontium, rubidium, and nitrogen isotope tracer uptake, and also that distribution within apple trees. So let's get into it. So, as we know, mineral balance is essential for quality horticultural goods. So for the sake of this experiment, I am going to be talking about nitrogen, potassium, and calcium. So just keep that in mind. So the first one that I'm talking about here is nitrogen. Nitrogen is essential. It's one of the greatest elements that is within the plant. It is what constitutes proteins and enzymes. There's also this direct link between crop yield and nitrogen nutrition. And nitrogen is mobile through both the xylem and the phloem, meaning it's taken up by transpiration stream and also can be redistributed in the case of a localized deficiency. So then we have potassium. Potassium is also one of the essential mineral elements. It is involved in ATP production. It's one of the huge regulators in osmotic water potential, and it is what is causing that opening and closing of that stomata. Like nitrogen, potassium is also mobile through xylem and phloem. And lastly, we have calcium. Calcium is a stability unit within the cell. It's what's sticking one cell to the other. It also plays a role as a secondary messenger. This is where we start to run into issues with calcium, because calcium is only xylem mobile. It can't be moved through the phloem, so essentially it's needing that transpirational flux to be put into its final destination. And that's just one of the challenges of working with nutrients, is having to consider these mobility aspects. Another challenge that we face as researching nutrients is the short-term nature that we have on a lot of these experiments. And also, I work with apple trees, so that's a perennial plant. So it's kind of difficult to assess also what was already in the plant and what came in during that short-term study. But there are ways to overcome this, and that we do that in this experiment with mineral analogs. And I used strontium for calcium and potassium, rubidium for potassium. Strontium for calcium and rubidium for potassium. And essentially what mineral analogs are is they are very similar to whatever mineral it is that they're tracing, essentially have the same charge, they're similar in size, but the plant can't really differentiate between the two. So they can be moved and placed in the same places that these minerals would be placed. But they're way less abundant in the soil. So it's easier to assess natural abundance and then input into the system to assess what was put in and what was moved where. And then also I'm using a nitrogen tracer. So same thing goes here. I'm using a 15 nitrogen isotope, which is heavier than the more abundant 14 nitrogen. So you can then make a ratio and take a proportion, calculate back out how much of that 15N was uptaken. There are other factors also to consider when doing studies like this, and that's something like transpirational flux. Like I mentioned, calcium is particularly only moved through that xylem, so you have to consider how the weather is affecting this transpiration flux. Also, in apples, we see all these different cultivars in the store, so maybe the scion is having a different effect on the demand for these nutrients. And those two are bolded because that's what I will be talking about, but there are other factors like rootstock uptake capacity as well as availability of these nutrients in the soil. So because I was talking about these tracers, I took a mass balance approach to how we would calculate back out what was there. So the first equation I am going to introduce to you is this one for the strontium and rubidium analysis. Essentially what this means is we take the concentration of the sample, subtract that from whatever that natural abundance was, put it through some unit conversions, and then multiply it by its biomass to get what that tracer content was. And we do something pretty similar to the nitrogen, only we have to calculate out first the proportion of that 15N to the lighter particle, and then put it straight back through into a similar equation to the top one, where it's that proportion times the concentration of nitrogen times its biomass to get that tracer content. And we'll revisit these in just a few seconds. Well, let's get into how I did this and why I did this. So the first, my objective was to determine how trees are altering their nutritional demands and that distribution pattern when the above ground conditions and demands are being altered. So to do this, I had three cultivars. which were Gala, Granny Smith, and Honeycrisp. They were growing on standard rootstocks M9 over in at our station at WSU in Wenatchee. And to remove the major sink organ of fruit, we made sure that we removed those flowers so to not create a greater demand. And what I did is I organized these trees into a split plot design. So I had everything grouped by treatments here. So you see that legend there at the bottom. I had four treatments. My first treatment was the highest dose of ABA, which is 500 milligrams per liter of ABA. So we expected to see there the highest reduction in transpiration. Then we had a moderate dose, which was 250 milligrams per liter, and we expected still an effect on that transpiration, but at a lesser rate. And then a control and the untreated control. This untreated control was exclusively for the natural abundance that those equations were asking for. So this was just for us to be able to calculate it out. And all of these received tracers, so the strontium, the rubidium, and the 15N at the time of organizing them. So I was treating the trees every 10 days, which is pretty frequently, but we wanted to keep that effect of transpiration pretty fixed and marked. So treated them every 10 days for 60 days. And then we put together a couple of hypotheses when we were putting this together. So the first thing I expected to see was this decreased transpiration and how that would encourage the uptake of the strontium tracer, which is the precursor for calcium, but limit how much it was moving into the above ground parts of the tree. Because with that diminished transpiration, you're diminishing that demand because the leaves aren't pulling as much through. While we didn't expect to see much of an effect on the nitrogen or rubidium, which is the tracer for potassium, because they are mobile through both of those systems. And then we also expected to see scion type to have an effect on its demand and how it was distributing these nutrients. But first, let's finish talking about how I did this. So in order to determine allocation, we split the tree into above ground parts and below ground parts. So we cut down the tree, we took the leaves off, we dried everything down, recorded biomass, and prepared it for analysis. So we did the in-house MPAES analysis for strontium and rubidium, and the 15 and the nitrogen, we sent it away to be assessed either at UC Davis at the Stable Isotope Lab or to our WSU Isotope Lab in Pullman. So this is the results of what we get from putting those numbers back into those equations that I showed you guys into the beginning. And what I really wanted to point out here on this figure is how strontium is being uptaken at a lesser rate than the rest. That's pretty consistent also with calcium. Calcium is taken up less when you compare it back to something like nitrogen and potassium. And I didn't see any major effects in the nitrogen or rubidium, so I put together this table to show you guys some of the major trends. So the first thing I wanted to show here is how Gala is actually consistently in both above ground and below ground the greatest container of this strontium tracer when you compare it to the other cultivars. Also, Gala is having a diminishing effect with how much tracer is there when you introduce this reduction in transpiration. So the control in both above and below ground actually has the highest quantity and is being decreased as you start reducing that transpiration. And we see Honeycrisp doing something quite the opposite. In the above ground parts, so the leaves and the shoots and the trunk, you see a gradual increase in strontium content as you introduce that ABA. While in below ground, we see also an increase in that high rate of ABA, but not so much in the low dose of ABA. And Granny Smith is doing something similar to the below ground of Honeycrisp, where it is showing an effect in the highest reduction of transpiration, but not so much in the lowest rate. And because I didn't have any major interactions, I wanted to visit these two factors individually. So first, let's take a look at how that tracer was being distributed, being above ground or below ground, by cultivar. So rubidium and nitrogen, see pretty standard across the board, not so much variability when you compare it back to strontium. Rubidium is doing what research says, also what the nitrogen is saying, so that split is pretty standard. But now if we take a look at that strontium, first thing we spot there are those error bars. Pretty variable. But also we see how Gala is kind of leveling itself out there. Still not completely even of a split, but it's more even than the others. Granny Smith is mobilizing actually more of that strontium into its above ground parts. Maybe because it's one of the more vigorous cultivars that we were working with, so it had a greater leaf area, so greater demand for this for the calcium moving through that transpiration. And then Honeycrisp is doing the opposite of Granny Smith. It's holding the majority of that in its roots and not putting it into its above ground parts. But still, that variability there is something to take into account. And when we visit this tracer distribution by treatment, we see similar to what we did with the cultivars. So rubidium is pretty standard. We do see an increase there in the roots when you introduce the highest rate of ABA, but for the most part, it's pretty even, and the nitrogen is doing the same. But if we look at strontium there, again, with the variability, but you see that gradual increase, which is logical. It's logical to see that because we expect calcium to behave this way. So the control is pretty even. ABA 250 is still holding the majority of some of that in its roots, while ABA 500 is holding the most of that in its roots. But what does this tell us? So let's revisit those hypotheses. My first hypothesis was that this decreased transpiration is going to encourage the strontium tracer to be uptaken, but limit how much of it it's putting into its above ground parts. While we don't expect to see much of anything with the nitrogen and the rubidium based on this decrease in transpiration. And yeah, essentially that's what we saw. We saw that the more mobile nutrients, potassium and nitrogen, are less dependent on these above ground conditions of transpiration. But also we saw that strontium had more variability, was able to be accumulated at a greater rate when transpiration was limited. And then my second hypothesis was that the scion type will directly influence this distribution pattern of nutrient tracers. And also we saw that not in a great significant degree, but we did see these general trends. So we saw that the scions were able to distribute their nutrients differently. Gala was more balanced. Honeycrisp wanted more of it in its roots, while Granny Smith wanted more of it in its above ground parts. And this actually boils down to a bigger picture. So this is pointing to the necessity that we have for more cultivar-specific management practices, especially in these premium cultivars like Honeycrisp. So we need to understand how these trees are behaving so that we can continue to produce consumer-ready products. And then with that, I would like to acknowledge Lee Kalkfitz. Thank you for the support and the help. My funding source, the Washington Tree Fruit Research Commission. And a super special thanks to my lab group. You guys were a great help. It was quite an extensive and labor-needy experiment. So if there's time, I will take questions. If not, I will also be around. This is my email, my advisor's email, and we have a lab Twitter, so you guys can keep up with us. Right. So we saw that in the calcium because if you remember this figure, it was uptaken at such a smaller rate, so the scale was smaller of how much the variation could be. So that's what I really attribute this huge variability being, because so little of it was uptaken. So any change would offset that.
How many plants do you use at replication?
So there was one of each cultivar in replications, but total I had 4 reps. And yeah. And I think it was like 48 trees. 48 trees in total.
Yeah, but one is for the region.
Correct.
Okay, and the other question, how old were the trees?
2 years.
2 years?
Yes.
So you kept them in pot for 2 years?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. No, I wanted to know because sometimes you have a wide range of variation. So sometimes if you use few replicates, you cannot see the differences. even those who know that they are there.
Sure.
So I wonder if, I know that these type of experiments are expensive. Are they?
Yeah.
That's why you have three enrichments per class. It's expensive.
Yeah.
And you use the same class for the three, you label them?
Yes.
The same with the three tracers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes?
What is the size of the container used? The capacity or the volume?
That's a really great question. Lee, do you have an idea? There are 10 gallon pots.
The volume or the capacity of the container will determine the heading to which the route will grow.
Sure, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I have a picture here of the root systems, and they were quite large in those pots. They're 10 gallon.
All right.
Is that it?
And that's about all the time we have for this talk. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your questions.